This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Fortunately, we have such a great guest who will probably be doing most of the talking on this episode of the Paracast that you won't have to put up with me and my head cold, which I just got like the day before. And Chris has what he calls Zuni reservation crud, which is kind of a cold, too, that he gets every so often. So regardless of what you call it, we're both in less than ideal shape.
But we have great to have our guest be introduced on the show.
We try to be original about it.
And Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum is a very special guest.
Well, I have stuff myself full of cough suppressant and all the things that go along with having a really bad respiratory virus, actually. So, but I'm really excited, Dr. Meldrum, to have you on the show. I've been a huge fan of your work for years since you've been in the public eye. Anything that I see with your name on it has instant credibility for me. I am an experiencer. I had my own possible Bigfoot encounter. I didn't see it, but I sure heard it and smelled it. So this has been a subject that has been near and dear to my heart for many years, and I just am so honored and pleased to have you on the show. You are known for being one of the very few credentialed scientists who's been willing to say, well, wait a minute, we can't just throw this out and call hairy hominids, which are found all around the world, allegedly. We just can't call this some sort of myth or legend. There's enough evidence to suggest that this is something that science should be taking seriously and at least not dismissing it out of hand, as many of the topics we discuss here on the Paracast are dismissed out of hand by the scientific and academic communities. I prefer to call these subjects proto-scientific subjects. So it's really an honor and a pleasure again to have you on the show. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
To start off, Jeff, I wanted to ask you about your interests. As Chris was making clear, you're one of the few academics who tackles subjects of this nature. What attracted you to it?
Well, my background is in anatomy, but also physical anthropology. And when I'm not teaching students over a human cadaver, I'm doing research on the evolutionary adaptations of the human body for our particular mode of locomotion, that is walking on two legs. So the evolution, the timing and pattern of the adaptations associated with bipedalism have been foremost in my research interests. And so on the one hand, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and certainly was familiar with the subject of Sasquatch, was introduced to it, it was in 1968 when Roger Patterson came through Spokane, Washington, and showed his documentary featuring that famous film clip, 60-second film clip from Bluff Creek. But, my real involvement in this from an academic point of view came about in 96 when, so it's been, 20 years now, that I was brought up face-to-face with a very fresh set of footprints. And, what could be more fascinating for a student of human bipedalism than to be a direct witness to trace evidence of another bipedal primate? And so on that level, on that academic or intellectual level, it dovetails with my research interests perfectly. Perfect natural experiment, if such a creature exists, to better understand our own evolutionary history. But it goes without saying that the subject has this intrinsic quality to it, that it's a mystery. And, I've always loved the things that were lurking there on the fringes of science, of scientific knowledge. Because for me, science has always been about exploration. I mean, I get I'm disciplined enough that I can put in the hard knocks and do the rote work in a research lab or in the field. But for me, my thrill is in exploration. I mean, it's in asking questions that have confounded the experts or have been, you know, as you discussed, have been neglected or dismissed. It's the what if questions, and with a firm, solid footing, a basis in hard evidence. You know, I was once confronted by a past department chairman who chided me by saying, "Well, after all, Jeff, these are just stories." And I looked at him for a moment. I said, "Well, just stories that leave footprints, that shed hair, that void scat, that vocalize, that are witnessed by credible, experienced outdoorsmen and hunters and professionals." I said, it's a lot more than just stories. And
good comeback.
Yeah. Well, for all the good it did.
Well, you know, we'll get into this later, but I'm sure there is some blowback from expressing an interest and being public about it. It's one thing to have a private interest and have it be kind of a closet subject that you're researching. It's another thing to dovetail your work with other investigators, field people, ask for samples and be very public about it. And, you know, I want to get into that's a whole subject in and of itself. But before we get too long down the road here, we just have a couple of minutes left for the segment. But you mentioned seeing back as a kid, seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film. Where do you come down on the whether that's a legitimate piece of visual evidence or a well-executed hoax?
I'm absolutely 100%, well, 99.99% convinced that is absolutely legitimate. I mean, I've looked at it from so many different angles. If I had nothing but the footprints that were documented on that scene, let alone the film that shows the correlated actions of the foot of the film subject, whatever it may be in everyone's mind, I would be on that basis alone convinced. But adding to that, as I said, the depiction of the actual subject, not only the actions of the foot during those several steps, but the anatomy from head to toe. I mean, it's a fascinating exercise to just literally go through and examine the anatomy. And I do that with my students sometimes. My physical therapy students, particularly at the last day when we're having reviews, we wrap things up. Sometimes I'll pop this up on the screen, and I've got a very high quality GIF of a clip of a loop of this thing. Close up, very crisp, very clear. You can pick out individual muscle groups, and I'll have them do that. I'll say, now identify as much of the surface anatomy that you can observe here. And then I go even further and say, now what is there odd about the way in which it walks? Because we will have discussed the determinants of human gait, right, and some of the parameters of normal human walking. And there are very dramatic and obvious contrasts in the way this thing walks. It's not simply a man in a fur suit, and anyone who says that just doesn't have the wherewithal to evaluate it with any credibility.
Right. Plus, the actual trackway indicates an animal of considerable weight.
Right. Weight and size, exactly. And yeah. So, it's a fascinating. You know, here we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of that that film next year, and we're still having these same conversations. You know, a lot of work has been done. It's interesting that perennially it seems that there are skeptics who take shots at it from various quarters, and invariably it emerges even with more luster than it had previously. Many cases we're able to, with that renewed interest, we're able to go back at it with technologies that weren't available and identify details that were completely unobservable back in 1967 when Patterson made the film, but are there and with the right technologies can be brought out, can be observed, can be understood better in ways that, a hoaxer in 1967 could never have anticipated, let alone have incorporated into that piece of footage.
Let's do our break here, guys. We have Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, and we're looking at the scientific side of Bigfoot research to see what kind of answers
we can achieve from it. This is going to be a real special episode, folks. So listen on with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
All right, guys. We're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no. We'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room.
Oh, no. Wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, four-season sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for four seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
Cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
This is a life-changing message for anyone with sleep apnea who is on the go and tired of dragging around a big, bulky home CPAP device. Now there's finally a portable device that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. You can even add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. It's the Transcend Mini CPAP, and if you're one of the first 100 callers, you can try Transcend risk-free for 10 days. So call now, 1-800-441-9833. Transcend is the world's first portable mini CPAP device. It gives you the freedom to sleep in total comfort anywhere you are. Our smallest and most advanced portable design ever, Transcend is so small and so light, you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. To guarantee your 10-day in-home trial, you must be one of the first 100 callers to call minicpap.com now. 1-800-441-9833. Again, that's 1-800-441-9833.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Before we go on, we're doing a real special for the holidays for the Paracast Plus. And that is, I put up three episodes from our premium area to give you an idea of what it's all about. It goes back to our episode of February 28th, 2016, the 10th anniversary episode.
So we have the commercial-free version. We have the After the Paracast podcast where we continue that interview. And we've got an interview from the other side of truth that Paul Kimball did with the ever-controversial Dr. Stephen Greer. It's all available from our forums. I'll give you an idea of what we offer in the Paracast Plus, which is, of course, the commercial-free version of the show, the After the Paracast podcast, a growing video library, and lots more. And the price begins at $4.99 a month, our price cheap. Check out plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. We have Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum. He's a scientist who is exploring the mysteries of Bigfoot. Now, you're pointing, Jeff, to your research into how humans began to walk upright and things like that. Do we think Bigfoot is kind of maybe a lost generation of humanoid that just didn't die off?
Well, certainly. The question is where would it plug into the family tree, and how far afield would we go to include it? For me, there are basically, I think, two reasonable working hypotheses, and they're that. They're simply that. I mean, it kind of gets the cart before the horse to really expend too much energy, other than to establish a sort of a theoretical context for considering it, but about what Sasquatch is before we acknowledge that indeed it exists. But for me, there's two possibilities. One, it has, well, both have been suggested by previous investigators and researchers. I think John Green was one of the first to suggest a connection with Gigantopithecus, as well as there were others back then too. But we know that this giant ape existed in Eastern Asia, well into the Pleistocene, perhaps as recently as 200,000 years ago. And so in Gigantopithecus, we have something that's the right size in the right place at the right time. But others, many have pointed out, we only have jaws and teeth. We don't have any postcranial skeletal remains that would determine with confidence whether this creature was upright standing or not. There are things that, in my mind, tip the scales in that direction. Dr. Krantz made an argument about the angles of the bodies of the lower mandible that has been preserved, which suggests a position of the neck forward between those two halves, two sides of the jaw. And also, there are things, you know, the shoulder of a large ape, especially one that has, you know, any inclination to be climbing up in the trees, the shoulder's been modified in such a way that walking on all fours is a bit problematic for the joints of the wrist and the elbow and the shoulder. And this is why chimps and gorillas, one of the reasons why they've adopted this unusual knuckle-walking stance and have evolved that in concert, parallel to one another almost certainly. On the other hand, some would point to bipedalism as being a very exclusive adaptation that marks the advent of the hominin radiation. Our immediate ancestors and relatives, since the divergence from a ancestor shared with chimpanzees, so some 7 million years ago, 6 to 7 million years ago. If that's the case, I mean, the thing that you always have to bear in mind when posing this question, and there are those out there, you know, who advocate this is just a lost tribe of people, it's just a feral human, a Homo sapiens, and there have been some more creative hypotheses thrown out there, I guess, as well. But if we look at what is it that defines Homo, for the longest time, until quite recently, the advent of tool use was the signature characteristic of the genus Homo. That's going to have to be modified now. Just a couple of years ago, some discoveries in East Africa have shown tool marks on archaeological remains, on bones, dating back to a time coincident with late Australopithecines. But the point simply is, when you look at Sasquatch, there's no material culture. There's no evidence of stone tools or even, you know, modified sticks or branches that are used consistently. It's all opportunistic, whacking of trees or breaking and brandishing of sticks, you know, in a threat display. There's no evidence of home bases. There's no evidence of fire control. There's no evidence really of complex social structure. Most sightings are of solitary individuals. Most footprints are of solitary individuals or females with offspring in tow. So if it is a hominid, it would have to be a very early radiation, early divergence. Now, one of my predecessors, Gordon Strasenberg, was a strong advocate for Paranthropus. It was an interesting one. Paranthropus shares some of the same kinds of hypertrophy of the chewing apparatus that we see in Gigantopithecus. Big, deep jaws and thick molar enamel, enlarged premolars, and tiny incisors and canine teeth, non-projecting canine teeth, which allows for that side-to-side motion during chewing. And I always thought, well, how could that be? I mean, you hear the fossil record for Paranthropus, you know, ceased about 1.5 million years ago in East Africa, and Paranthropus only stood about 5'8" males perhaps. So it's the wrong size in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I thought that would have ruled it out, except that just recently, you're probably aware of the discovery of Homo floresiensis,
yeah,
the hobbit in Southeast, yeah, Asia, with a remarkably recent age of as young as perhaps 50,000 years now, as it's been modified up a little bit, but still 50,000 years is just a snap of the fingers in geologic time. Well, how do you, and everything points to Homo floresiensis being a very early Homo or even late Australopithecine. Skeletal anatomy, the thing has a brain the size of a chimpanzee. Its postcranial skeleton, its lower limbs, for example, look just like a chimpanzee or an Australopithecine. So how do you connect the dots from a late Australopithecine, early Homo in East Africa, or at the very best, perhaps in Asia Minor, making its way all the way to Southeast Asia, without leaving any fossil record in between that we've discovered yet?
Yeah, there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so that's not out of the question at all either. Something like a robust Australopithecine that as it spread, its range spread across South Asia into Eastern Asia, could have achieved gigantism, just as so many other mammals did during the early Pleistocene, and expanded its range into North America. Or Gigantopithecus would be another. So
if it goes the other way, because the hobbits actually sort of devolved in terms of their size, probably because of the environment, and they became smaller to adapt to their environment.
Let's do our break, guys.
Yeah,
we've got more to come with Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum and Gene and Chris. We're learning a lot. The scientific look at Bigfoot and the possibilities with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
The EPA says the air in our homes is up to 5 times more contaminated than outside air. The solution is not just to filter your air, but detox it. UVforLife.com now offers a doctor-recommended UVforLife.com sterilization unit to kill over 99% of viruses, bacteria, molds, and dangerous chemicals. Go to UVforLife.com. Add promo code GCN at checkout to save $100. That's UV, the number 4, life.com. UVforLife.com. Don't just filter your air, detox it.
Lifetime Grazed 100% grass-fed beef has the health benefits you seek. When compared to conventional beef, it offers good fats while virtually eliminating the bad. That's the result of cattle who never eat grain, ever. Rich in antioxidants, including vitamin E, C, beta-carotene, and CLA. No artificial hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all our fresh, non-cooked products with only 100% grass-fed beef, go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to get 30% off your order. MidasResources.com, or find us on Facebook.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. you can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com. And if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and negative articles can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. It happens a lot, and it's just not fair. But what can you do? ReputationDefender.com can help protect your good name. Get a free consultation now. Call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system, and the analysis is absolutely free. Make the best things about you jump out in searches. Protect your personal and professional reputation, your business, and your income. Get your free reputation analysis from ReputationDefender.com right now. Call 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com today.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
If Chris sounds a little bit hoarse there, it's because he's suffering from the creeping rot.
It's the Zuni crud.
The Zuni crud, the creeping rot. I'm suffering from who knows what. But I have the tissue here, and I've taken the antihistamines, which have done nothing to my voice, as most of you will notice. And we're plugging on, but we don't have to worry about it because we have Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum here. He will keep us going, even when we run astray. Chris?
I have a quick question, though. Going through the the report logs and witness descriptions and looking at regional types of Sasquatch or Bigfoot, you do tend to see size variation, variation in description of how muscled they are. Some appear to be smaller in stature, like the skunk apes, for instance. The wild man or the Almastes, for instance, are seem to be a smaller version. How can we account for what appear to be different types?
Right. Well, one of the things that has started to take shape and a theme that I've been pounding the drum about that is altering the anthropological community's perception of the place for this notion rests on two principles. One is that there's a growing appreciation, and this has been happening over the past three or four decades now, that the hominid niche is not an exclusive club, as was once thought. It was once believed that it was such an odd combination of adaptations, there could be only one species in it at a time. Now we know that from a burgeoning, burgeoning I guess is a relative term, but a growing fossil record of hominid evolution, that there were multiple species coexisting across the landscape at any given time in the past. So if you could step in a time machine and say go back 2 million years to East Africa, you might bump into right now are known at least four species of hominid. If you could go back to East Asia, as recently as 20,000 years ago. You might bump into any of a half a dozen different species living alongside Homo sapiens. So those two recognitions, those two acknowledgments, one that there has been this, the rule rather than the exception has been the contemporaneity of many differently adapted hominid species living side by side across the landscape through time, and two, the fact that new revelations, recent revelations, have shown that many of these branches, several of these branches, not many, but several of these branches have persisted until more recently than ever recognized. So we have hobbits that are at least as young as 50,000 years. We have just recently a mandible of a Homo erectus was dredged up off the coast of Taiwan in a fisherman's net, and it was dated to 10,000 years ago. We have occupation sites attributed to Neanderthal that are perhaps as young as 10,000 years. We have Homo heidelbergensis in that found a specimen outside of Beijing that's less than 20,000 years. I mean, these were dates that would be unthinkable in the recent past. So why, in the face of that mounting evidence, on the one hand, and on the other hand, in the face of so much evidence and so much ethnographic tradition that there were several types of wild men, as you pointed out, the very Neanderthal-like Almasti, the little Australopithecine-like Hobbit, or perhaps Orang Pendek, the modern or the recent equivalent, the Himalayan Yeti, that all evidence, the best evidence, points to a divergent big toe that would suggest it's a much more ape-like form, still inhabiting the subtropical to temperate forests of the Himalayas. And the Sasquatch, with its equivalents seen in China, in Southeast Asia, in the Caucasus Mountains. I was recently over in Russia and followed up on a sighting of a creature that whose description was remarkably similar to Sasquatch and left 17-inch footprints that were essentially indistinguishable in all their characteristics and their specifics, contrast to human footprints, remarkably similar to a Sasquatch track.
What I'm hearing and what you're saying is that humanoid species are both older and newer than we previously suspected, that some branches survived for a longer period of time and might therefore still survive.
That's right, absolutely. So the term I like to apply to that is relic hominoid, a species that once was more widespread, but now is restricted, now persists into the present in a more restricted range and distribution. And of course, hominoid refers to the superfamily Hominoidea, which includes us and the great apes. So it would encompass, things that are very ape-like, like the Yeti, or things that could be early hominins, like the Sasquatch, and things that could be very closely related to us, like the Almas.
Now, this is interesting here because I listen to you and I'm hearing a scientist simply explain in a very logical way why these things can be. So why is it that scientists do not appear to accept any of this? It doesn't sound to me like it's anything outside the realm of logic at all.
Well, that's the case that I've been trying to make. You know, like I said, I've been beating this drum for quite a number of years, and now the evidence is becoming sort of overwhelming. It's undeniable, but some lessons are slow to be learned. And as I said, there was this paradigm, this notion of a single species that was very influential in anthropology back in the '60s. And so Ivan Sanderson wrote this encyclopedic tome in which he marshaled all this evidence for subhuman species around the world. But when he presents that to the academic community in 1961, when it was published, that was right at the heyday of the notion that there could be only one hominid species at a time. And it was only subsequently in the 70s that the fossil record began to expand to the point that it was, just undeniable that there were multiple species coexisting, that it wasn't an exclusive club, and it's just been slow for that to finally take root. And even with the acknowledgement of that, it still was felt, basically the argument was just was just drop-kicked further down the pike, you know, kicked the can down the road to apply to modern humans. Well, modern humans, because of our culture and our technology and our intelligence, you know, we have driven all these other hominids to extinction. Well, that's a big assumption when we have footprints and visual sightings of hominoids in, you know, in Eastern Asia and Asia Minor and Siberia. When we have reports of Sasquatch in North America, and we have reports of little people, the Orang Pendek in Southeast Asia. I mean, that's the point. So,
you forgot the Yowie.
The Yowie, you know, the Yowie is a little bit radioactive for me. you know, my expertise is in footprints, and there still hasn't been presented a convincing footprint case. You know, a case based on footprint evidence that we have a hominoid or a hominid in Australia. So what exactly we're dealing with there, it's one that fascinates me, and I've read widely on it, but I've always kind of dropped a little bit. I'm not sure exactly yet. I haven't followed my train of thought out to its conclusion as of yet. But the point I wanted to make, though, is while the formal institutional scientific community still is reluctant, this is the backdrop, I guess I should say, but there is also another veneer, and that is this notion of skepticism and the misplaced label of pseudoscience when it applies to the search for Sasquatch and other relic hominoids. And that is another issue that we've had to deal with, is, you know, the show me the body. The mantra that Michael Shermer likes to chant.
Right.
They want the conclusion before the evidence is analyzed.
Right.
We'll have more to discuss with Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum. And Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Don't know what contaminants are lurking in your water? Time to get a ProPure. Take advantage of ProPure's holiday sale. Save 25% on all ProPure water filter products. Sales good through December 31st. There's a ProPure water filter for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Is there a stock market bubble in the making?
You need an early warning system for your investments because you work too hard to be surprised by your money. Now, guarding your wealth has never been easier. Introducing WealthGuard from OnTheMarkMoney.com, an early warning system that tracks all your accounts. WealthGuard lets you know in advance if your accounts are dropping. It works for all accounts, whether you work with us or not. Get WealthGuard today, 100% free. Go to OnTheMarkMoney.com. That's OnTheMarkMoney.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. There's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-290-8480. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-290-8480. That's 1-800-290-8480.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, my head cold feels a little bit better. I think it's because it's such an enjoyable episode. Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum is here to talk about discoveries into Bigfoot, Sasquatch. And it's enough to set off Siri.
Sorry, I couldn't find anything like that.
You're not looking, Siri. That's the problem. But it has been happening more and more lately. I think it's some kind of psychosomatic ailment or some kind of paranoid or paranormal phenomenon. But seriously speaking, Jeff, is it possible at this point in time to even estimate the population of these creatures around the world? I mean, how many would it take to produce an occasional sighting, and how many would we need to just have evidence all over the place?
Right. Well, I have not tackled that issue on a global scale, certainly, but just to give an example on a more local scale, because I'm often asked this, how many Sasquatch do you think there are? And I always try to emphasize the rarity, you know, and the comeback is always, well, how do you sustain a viable reproductive population? Well, that's a real nebulous concept. And, you know, if you dig a little bit, you'll find that there is no standard. There's no scale, really. It depends entirely upon the genetic load, the genetic, deleterious recessive load that a population bears, which if it's high, then that precipitates, you know, inbreeding depression. You don't marry your cousin because the chance of the two of you having some harmful recessive gene cropping up in your children then becomes statistically very high. But if your gene pool is fairly free of those kinds of mutations, then a population can muddle along just fine. You know, mountain gorillas went through a bottleneck where their population was reduced to below 200. And they've rebounded now, I think there's between 600 and 800, with no signs of deleterious effects of inbreeding. Their gene pool could tolerate that. Now, one rule of thumb, if you do some research or dig into that, that's thrown out by some for vertebrates, would be about 1,000 individuals to have a reasonably viable population. Well, that's easily accommodated in North America for Sasquatch.
Yeah.
A little exercise, and I won't go through the whole thing with you here, but, you know, we have some suggestive evidence from which we can infer that, you know, being solitary, they probably have a very large range given the habitat, you know, depending on the habitat too, how that range may vary considerably. But let's say 1,000 square miles, and in that 1,000 square miles, a solitary male may defend or patrol an area that overlaps that of some females. So say in 1,000 square miles, there's one dominant male and one or two, maybe three females and probably a couple offspring in the mix there. Let's just say five individuals. Well, if you look at a map of Idaho, and also bear in mind one more factor, there's a pretty good correlation, it seems, between credible Sasquatch sightings and precipitation. It seems that these creatures require a habitat that's is associated with about 16 to 18 inches or more of precipitation.
So more temperate.
Yeah, temperate but moist. I mean, they need moist forests. The core habitat seems to be Douglas fir forests, you know, in a rich understory, say with blueberry and other fruiting shrubs and so forth. There has to be water. They seem to be wet, pretty wet apes, you know, require wet habitat. But in any case, you look at Idaho, how many thousand square mile plots could you fit into the areas of Idaho that have a suitable habitat associated with that kind of rainfall? Well, there's about 12, maybe 14. That's going to vary, obviously, with surface area, given topography and given patchiness of the habitat, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these are very coarse numbers. But if that's in a ballpark, 5 times 12, there's only about 60 Sasquatch in the entire state of Idaho. There's 20,000 black bear in Idaho, by comparison.
Right. That could also explain why we haven't found skeletons, why we don't exactly find more evidence, physical evidence of their passing, shall we say?
Because if you add to those numbers the fact that they are probably long lived, large apes, and there's a good correlation, positive correlation of longevity with body size, so they could live to be 50, 60 years old easily. So of those 60 that are in Idaho, how many of them are in their golden years? That are going to die a natural death because they wouldn't have any natural predators. You know, there's not many things that would give an 800-pound gorilla cause for concern out in the forests of North America. So, you know, how often is a death even going to occur in Idaho, for example, using our case? You know, it may be at one in 10 years. And so what are your chances of finding that one body that has secreted itself off in some nook or cranny because it was feeling sick or decrepit or old and died, removed from its surroundings? When you think in terms of that degree of rarity, then the objections to the lack of that definitive physical evidence aren't really so damning after all.
Right, but if there are no predators directly and no impediments to population, wouldn't that population grow over time somewhat?
Well, not necessarily, because the rate of reproduction is very low in large apes. So you look at, say, orangutans, just as an example, a female will only give birth every 6 to 8 years, and they're very slow to develop. So that whole life history cycle, it's not like rabbits or rats reproducing, or even deer or elk reproducing, or even bear. I mean, it's you know, potentially four times. I think bears' life expectancy is somewhere between, you know, 20 and 30 years. So this is twice to three times that length with a much lower rate of reproduction. So, no, I don't think it would. And it's not to say even without natural predators, you know, there's accidents, there's illness, there can be starvation due to hard winters or whatever. But yeah, and of course then we've got, you know, anytime you add to the mix habitat degradation and fragmentation, that's also going to affect the ability of especially these lone solitary individuals to find a mate, you know, to get together for procreation. And so, I don't think we would expect burgeoning populations. This is the challenge of conserving the other great apes. You know, when a gorilla population goes down to a bottleneck like the mountain gorillas did, it takes them decades to rebound.
Right. You know, that's not even mentioning the vast spaces in British Columbia and parts of Alberta that very few people have ever even been. I mean, there's millions of acres up there that are virgin, untapped. There's no way in, no way out. There may be, you know, a breeding population up there that's then kicking out the young males to go out on their own. But one thing that's always surprised me, and this is a figure that you could obviously argue about Sasquatch sightings in Oklahoma and Kansas, but according to my research, these types of creatures have been seen in 48 of 50 states, seen and reported, and that is unbelievable. I mean, where would a Bigfoot hide, or the DuPont monster, as he's called, in southern Illinois?
Well, I think you used the operative word there. It is rather unbelievable. I just have a real hard time. If you open up a field guide to mammals, Peterson's field guide to mammals, and turn to the range map of black bears, which are another large omnivore, while they may partition that niche, I'm sure they partition that niche a bit differently, still they have some of the basic habitat requirements that we've associated with Sasquatch. You know, look at the range distribution there, and it doesn't cover 48 of, you know, states.
Right.
And so I always challenge the would-be reporters to corroborate their visual sighting with footprint evidence.
Yes,
and even the footprint evidence has to be examined carefully. I mean, it's been my experience. I think those numbers are grossly overinflated, because when I've had the opportunity to track down and examine footprint evidence, you know, you cannot take someone at their word, because most, with a few exceptions, I mean, there are experienced, qualified, authoritative witnesses out there, no doubt, but, you know, a lot of the footprint examples that are shared with me are, you know, they could be potholes, they could be misidentified bear, lots of misidentified human footprints. It just requires that I really look at that. So I can't take those reports on paper at face value, and especially in a visual account where all you have is the ability of that individual to describe their experience. It's not necessarily reliable.
We've got more to come with Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I'm David Hall, founder of Diamond Gusset Jeans, here to wish you all a Merry Christmas. For over 20 years, we have built a loyal customer base with 100% American-made jeans featuring enhanced fit, comfort, durability, and style. Today, all of our inventory is discounted by 20%, so don't delay. Enjoy a wonderful shopping experience at Gusset.com. Thanks for keeping our American dream alive, the original Diamond Gusset Jean.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.